WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we celebrate Frank Sinatra's 80th birthday. We'll hear from some of his musical collaborators, from a couple of people behind his reissues, and from his daughter, Nancy. And we'll celebrate his birthday in the best way I can think of by playing some of his greatest recordings. Nancy Sinatra is our first guest. She's put together a book about her father to commemorate his birthday. It's called Frank Sinatra, An American Legend. Nancy Sinatra had a few hit records of her own in the 60s, including These Boots Are Made for Walking and a duet with her father called Something Stupid. I asked her to choose a song her father recorded that has personal significance for her, and she chose this 1944 recording of She's Funny That Way, which he used to sing for her mother, his first wife. Nancy says many years later, her father said he still thought of her mother when he sang it.
I can't save a dollar, ain't worth a cent. She'd never holler, she'd live in a tent. I got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way. Though she'd love to work and slave for me every day, she'd be so much better off if I went away.
But Nancy Sinatra's new book comes with a CD that includes excerpts of Frank Sinatra's early radio broadcasts. I asked her to tell us about his very first radio appearance on the Major Bowes original Amateur Hour, on which he appeared in 1935 with the group The Hoboken Four.
They were a separate group, the three guys, and I think they were called the Three Flashes. Major Bowes knew they were all from Hoboken, and I guess that was his little brainchild. Or maybe it was just to shorten the time of their performances. I'm not sure why he put them together, but he did, and he named them the Hoboken Four. My dad traveled with them for a while and then began to resent the fact that he ended up as part of this quartet because he had auditioned as a solo artist.
So Major Bowes stuck Sinatra with this trio to form the Hoboken.
Exactly.
Okay, so this is Frank Sinatra's very first radio appearance, 1935, with the Hoboken Four.
Shine and sway your blues, why don't you shine? Start with your shoes, shine each place up, make it look like new.
Boom, 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 boom.
Shine your face up, I want to see you wear a smile or two. Oh, shine your these and those. You'll find everything turn out right fine. Folks will shine up to you, everybody's gonna hide you, do you? You'll make the whole world chocolate drops. Let me hear you call. Shine up to you, everybody's gonna hide you, do you? You'll make the whole world shine.
Shine and sway your bluesy.
Ah.
Shine, start with your shoesy.
Ah.
You'll make the whole world shine.
That's Frank Sinatra's first radio appearance. And my guest is Nancy Sinatra, who's written a new book about her father called Frank Sinatra, An American Legend. Did your father talk with you much about those early days when he was trying to find himself professionally?
He talked a lot about his family in those days, how disappointed they were that he didn't stay in school. He told me a lot about his early jobs, washing dishes, just anything to scrounge up a few pennies. Now, he hates pennies so much, he doesn't even look at them, he ignores them. puts them away in a jar, gets rid of them immediately.
I want to play another recording from the CD that comes with your new book, Frank Sinatra, An American Legend. And this is the recording of his last broadcast with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra when he's introducing his replacement, Dick Hames. This was recorded in 1942. Let's listen to it.
Folks, this is Frank Sinatra's farewell broadcast with his band. After tonight, he's going to be strictly on his own. And Frank, I want to tell you that everyone in the band wishes you the best of luck.
Thanks, Mac, and I'd like to say that I'm going to miss all you guys after kicking around for 3 years. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to meet the boy who's going to take my place as the vocalist with Tommy in the band. He's a fine guy, a wonderful singer, and he was good enough for Harry James and Benny Goodman, and that's really saying plenty. Folks, I'd like you to meet Dick Hames.
Well, Frank, I don't know if anyone can really take your place with this band, but I'm going to be in there trying. You can bet on that. As for you, well, I know that you'll be knocking them dead on your own hook.
So, thanks,
well,
Dick.
I agree with you there, Dick, and thanks a lot, Dick Hames. Frank, before you hit the road, how about one more song just for Auld Lang Syne?
That's all right with me, Tom. Give me the beat on our arrangement of the song as you, and I'll see what I can do with it.
I hear music when I look at you, a beautiful theme of every dream I ever knew.
Back with Nancy Sinatra, the recording we just heard is featured on a CD that comes with her new book about her father. Did he talk to you much about this period of his life, leaving Tommy Dorsey, or what it was like to be with the big bands?
Yes, we really went into that in depth because a lot of the the negative legend or myth about him has to do with his leaving Dorsey and how he managed to get out of that horrible contract.
What was so bad about the contract?
It was over a third of his income that was sort of held hostage by Tommy Dorsey for the rest of Frank's life, which I thought was just horrendous. And it was handled by, the breaking of the contract was handled by the top agents and lawyers in the business in New York. And but the myth was that that mafia people, I don't even know who they were supposedly, but the myth was that these people went to Tommy Dorsey and made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Mario Puzo told me that he made up that line in The Godfather, that he'd never heard that about my dad or connected with my dad. But now, of course, everybody thinks it's his. The Dorsey contract, according to my dad, was almost impossible to break. So he really had to get some very strong attorneys in there. And what they did was, they reminded Tommy Dorsey that he liked broadcasting on NBC, and these people represented NBC. And they said, if you want to continue to work for NBC, you're going to have to let this guy go.
So what was the next step for your father after he left the Dorsey Orchestra?
Well, one of the legendary moments of his life. He went to the Paramount Theater alone, but working for, alone meaning not connected to an orchestra, but working for or with Benny Goodman and his orchestra. And it was total tumult. I mean, the theater just, the way it was described to me was it felt like the theater was just going to come down.
When you were 4 years old, your father, I think he recorded Nancy with a Laughing Face.
Mm-hmm.
And that song was a present for you for your fourth birthday? Is that?
Oh, I don't know if it was a present. An interesting, sweet sidelight of that is that Jimmy Van Heusen, when I turned 16, he wrote the music for the song. He gave me his rights, his ASCAP rights.
Really?
To the song when I turned 16. Isn't that dear?
That really is.
Isn't that adorable? I don't know if it was a gift for me when I was a little girl, but it certainly is a gift for me now. I love hearing it. Whenever I hear it, it brings a lump to my throat, you know. It's very sentimental.
Was it supposed to be about you? I mean, it sounds really like it's a song to a lover than a daughter, but...
No, it was about me, yeah. Lyrics written by Phil Silvers, the wonderful comedic actor, who also, by the way, named his daughter Nancy after the song.
Why don't we hear it?
Okay.
It's Frank Sinatra, Nancy with a Laughing Face.
If I don't see her each day, I miss her. Gee, what a thrill each time I kiss her. Believe me, I've got a case on Nancy with a laughing face.
My guest is Nancy Sinatra, and she's written a new book about her father called Frank Sinatra, An American Legend. How much did you see your father when you were growing up? How much was he actually home?
Not a whole lot. He was really, I liken his work to traveling salesman. You know, he was pretty much a traveling salesman. I heard him on the radio a lot as a little girl. The most normal child... part of my childhood was when he was under contract to MGM, and we were living in the San Fernando Valley in California, and we actually got to have dinner together and breakfast together, and that was kind of Father Knows Best time for us.
When your father started having affairs with other women, and that was being covered by the press, and your mother was finding out sometimes through press reports about it, what was it like for you in the house?
My mother had a knack, and still has really, of putting forward a happy face. She generally kept that stuff from us. They actually split when my dad was looking to marry Ava Gardner. I think the reality of it set in, and she could not help but be sad. I mean, it was just too tough for her. So for that period of time, we were sad also, because... not because we understood divorce or anything. I mean, Dad, we were used to his being away. Tina never knew him any other way. But because of my mother's sadness. It was not self-indulgent in any way. It was just she couldn't avoid it. I mean, she would have heart palpitations and faint a little, or have what I guess used to be called the vapors. You know, she just couldn't get it together for a while. But life went on. I mean, we still kept our commitments to brownie troops or bluebirds or whatever we were doing at the time, and my brother with his Cub Scouts and all of that stuff, you know. Nothing really changed.
When your parents divorced, was your father still a part of your life, even though he was still on the road a lot and you maybe didn't get to see him very much?
Always. Yeah, always. Again, it didn't change much. It was really like he was still on the road, in a way.
Now, when you were growing up, how did his records figure into your life or into your friends listening? Was that your music, or was that just, you know, Dad stuff?
No, it was not our music. Our music was Elvis. Rhythm and blues was beginning then, when I was preteen and teenager. It was underground radio. We used to listen to a station that came on after midnight. And that's when we would hear the early R&B hits, like the original Shaboom, for example. We did a dance called the DB, which stood for the Dirty Boogie. So, you know, to hear my dad and Nelson Riddle was not a big thrill, you know, for my friends. I, of course, had a great appreciation for it. And I was studying classical piano at the time. I studied for 12 years, actually. So I was getting a real musical education. My friends were much more interested in the other stuff.
Is your father singing anymore?
I don't know. You know, people ask me that with hopeful looks on their faces because they want to be able to say that they saw him perform.
Right.
But I can't promise that. I don't really know. Sometimes when we talk about it, he says, well, no, I'm happy now. I'm so content not having to schlep around the country. And other times he'll say, you know, I miss it. I really think maybe I should go back to work. I don't really know.
Nancy Sinatra, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. I've really enjoyed this.
Nancy Sinatra has written a new book about her father called Frank Sinatra, An American Legend. Sometime soon on Fresh Air, we'll hear an expanded version of that interview in which Nancy Sinatra will discuss her own recording career. This is Fresh Air.